And good morning. It is 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. Joining me on the phone lines right now is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. And Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you as always.
You bet. Good to be with you.
First of all, I know that you're up for re-election this year. You know, we're past the May primaries now, looking to the November election. First question I have for you is, why should voters give you another term?
Well, I think voters are, you know, they like results and continuity, and I think we've done that most recently with, you know, passing a farm bill out of the House, you know, continuing that work. There's important work still yet to be done, but I think people would like to see that type of effort continue, and they know, I think, based on the last four terms, I think they know that they can trust me, and I'm going to do the best I can for them. And you know, there's just some things that it's a difficult environment that we work in here in Washington, you know, we don't have the federal resources that we used to have in years gone by, and so we're trying to do more with less. And so I think most voters appreciate an innovative, fresh approach to how we do things and not so much an institutionalized, this is the way we've always done it type approach. And I think one of the things that I think folks can count on from me is, you know, an outside-of-the-box approach. How do we get things done, and, you know, bringing people together and building consensus on how we can move our district and our state forward and in a tough environment.
How do you think Republicans overall are going to do in this midterm election?
Well, I think we're going to do very well. I think historically what you see in a midterm election, particularly in a first term, is, you know, typically a referendum on the president. In this case, the numbers really make a very compelling argument to continue to support Republican policies. And this president has really accomplished quite a bit in his first almost 2 years in office, and I think ultimately that will be the determining factor in why folks want to continue with that trajectory. We're seeing historic low numbers of unemployment. We're seeing with tax reform how that's empowering our economy. We're 4% growth, and the president says he's not happy with 4%. He wants to go to 5%. That's a big thing when you're talking about an economy the size of ours, to be able to accomplish not only 4% growth, but even have 5% as a goal and a realistic goal. And so I think what you're seeing is people going back to work. People are saving money. People have more money in their pocket to do with what they want. We're seeing less government regulation so businesses can thrive. So there's a lot of reasons to continue to support the agenda as it is and continues to be on the right course.
And as you know, Democrat voters are going to be energized to get out here in the midterm election. Kind of your thoughts of that? Does it concern you and fellow Republicans about that? Because there's a possibility of maybe losing seats, possibly in the House and the Senate.
Well, I think what you're seeing is, with some of the things on the national scene, for example, with people like Maxine Waters from California, who are inciting potentially violence against cabinet officials and so on. We've seen the evidence of that with Kirstjen Nielsen, DHS secretary, being essentially run out of a restaurant. Sarah Huckabee, same situation. Other cabinet and the White House officials. Pam Bondi, attorney general from Florida, although she's not part of the administration, has been supportive of the administration, and she experienced that. And if these national Democrats, people like Maxine Waters and others, want to continue with that, that says an awful lot about them. It says an awful lot about the direction that their party wants to take the country. And I think ultimately if they expect to pick up seats, they're going to have to, you know, dial back the rhetoric and start thinking of ways they can be productive. You know, it's one of the things that I've sort of talked about since I got into this business is that, you know, it's easy to talk about what you're against. People want to know what you're for, what you stand for, what you believe in. And if this is what she stands for and believes in, and other Democrats want to go along with that, other the national Democrats in Washington want to go along with that, then I suspect that their prospects for midterms are not too rosy.
As we think about, let's switch gears for just one second. There's been a lot of things that have been taking place over the past couple of weeks. One of the big things has been the immigration issue that's been going on with zero tolerance in that. How do you think that was handled, and how do you think that this should be resolved as you all work in immigration reform?
Well, I think what we have to do is take into account that we have laws on the books. And are we going to be a nation of laws, or are we not? And, you know, as we understand that when you come into this country illegally, you've broken the law. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not entitled to due process once you're in the country, but the fact of the matter is breaking the law is breaking the law. So the first crossing is a misdemeanor. You know, that should be a fairly easy thing to adjudicate and send you back across the border or to your where you came from. But the problem is that we end up with, in many cases, we have folks that have arrived at the border, they've crossed illegally, they're declaring asylum when, in fact, maybe they are not an asylum, a legitimate asylum case. Some of them are presenting with children. Some of those might be their children. Some of them might be young children that are being trafficked. We don't know. And so we've got an awful lot of vetting that needs to take place even before we can adjudicate these individuals. But, you know, look, we don't want to not allow immigrants in the country, but there's a process and a policy for that. And so, you know, people talk about building the wall. Yeah, I'm for building the wall. I know that there should be doors in that wall, and those are the places that you come in, and there's a process. You know, at the very least, sign the guest book when you come in. My goodness, we just can't have the continued influx of undocumented immigrants and expect that we're not going to have problems with it as a result. So, you know, it's a situation that every president has faced, and similar situations, like, for example, in the Obama administration. You know, he had similar policies with regard to family separations and so on. But, you know, nobody seemed to care then at that point when it was President Obama who was separating children from their families. But with this president, it became a major issue. It's no less tragic when it's under one president than it is under another. And so all I'm asking for is consistency. If you're going to be outraged at the way these people are treated when they enter our country under one president and they have, you know, the same exact treatment under another, then you should be equally outraged under that president. And it just seems that there's been a very selective application of people's disdain for this treatment. And, you know, all I'm asking for is fairness and consistency.
And with this, of course, with the separation of children from their families and that, what do you think should be done in that regard by way of either reuniting or anything like that?
Well, I think that if, and to the extent possible, where you have a family with children that are verified that these are the children of the adult, to the extent possible, I think you ought to, you know, maintain family unity, family cohesiveness. In some cases, it might not be indicated. In some cases, you might have somebody who is crossing illegally that might be a you know, multiple violator, may have other issues beyond just crossing the border illegally. And, you know, we may have some of that on record. We may not. We may also know that maybe this child that's in their custody is not really their child. We may also know that in some cases, maybe the child was brought against was possibly taken against another parent's will. So there may be a parent remaining in the home country that is has not given consent for this child to be taken away and into another country. There's a whole lot of extenuating circumstances that you just can't lay down a one-size-fits-all template and say, here it is. And we're assuming an awful lot of responsibility and liability and so on, when we bring people into the country. And, you know, it's just going to require an awful lot of vetting. And, you know, the president's been clear about this. What I'd like to see is more administrative law judges on the border to be able to more quickly address the backlog. And, you know, what we don't want to get into is a catch-and-release scenario where we say, okay, here's a court date, see you in 6 months, and then we never see those individuals again. that presents a major problem. That's why we have undocumented immigrants in this country to the extent that we do, is because we have not been able to adequately adjudicate them to determine what their disposition should be. So I think, you know, obviously we want to enforce the laws. Where we've got folks in custody, they're entitled to due process, and that due process needs to be as quick as possible so that we can, if necessary, send them back. If they're legitimate asylum seekers, then we can take the appropriate action.
Congressman Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. Want to ask you about last week, about the House passing the Farm Bill and the Senate going through their version as well. What do you think the final Farm Bill will look like?
Well, you know, the president has been clear about the work requirements and that he wouldn't sign a farm bill that didn't have some work requirements in it. So I think one of the things that's been somewhat controversial about this, and I think unfounded, is that the House version of the farm bill did implement work requirements for nutrition benefits. And I think that's reasonable. And I think, you know, I've seen polls even from sources like the L.A. Times. It said upwards of 70% of respondents believe that it's appropriate to ask people to put in a little bit of work to be able to receive some of these benefits. Now, there were no cuts to the commodity title. There was a reprogramming of dollars to include career and technical education, so folks that are in a situation where they need nutritional help could also be in a situation where they could benefit from some career and technical education to put them into the workforce and be productive. And the idea for these programs is not to be a way of life, but to help bridge gaps in people's income circumstances when the economy is bad and so on. But, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of years is a significant decline in the number of people even applying for nutrition benefits, and that's indicative of an improving economy and, you know, job market and so on. So all we're trying to do is help people to be a productive part of the economy and rejoin the workforce, give them the skills that they need, and not require and rely on these benefits. They're there if they need them, but to what we'd like to see is for them to move into, you know, a productive part of the economy so they can do better for themselves and not rely on this, you know, prescribed benefit that the government says you're only worth this much. I think you're worth a heck of a lot more, and I want to help you get there. And I think most of us on the House Ag Committee felt the same way. We want to help people get to a point where they don't need these benefits anymore. And the economy's improving, but we want to make sure that the resources are there to help provide the training necessary to get people off of these programs and into a more productive lifestyle.
Real quick, let me ask you about steel tariffs. Are you concerned about steel tariffs, especially with the 1st Congressional District being steel country, if you will, and effect they may have on businesses in the 1st Congressional District?
Well, what we have is to kind of try and reconcile. This district is unique in that we are the second largest steel producing district in the nation and possibly the third or fourth largest soybean producing district in the nation, and so trying to reconcile the interests of those two industries is a challenge. But what I would say, broadly speaking, as Americans, what we have to do is position ourselves to no longer be victimized by a predatory economy and economic practices of countries like China. China is the one of the biggest offenders of WTO rules. They float their currency. They routinely flout WTO rules. Ever since they've been in, since 2001, they've been a problem. They require way, way more than they give in their trade deals. For example, if you're going to do, you know, a lot of American companies will go to China because they think that they're getting a better deal on labor, on production costs. And that may or may not be true, but one of the things that is true is that you can't own more than a 49% stake in any Chinese entity. So you enter into a joint venture scenario, and as part of that joint venture, you've got to give up your intellectual property. That is your proprietary information. And so what happens is you go to work and your business starts turning out widgets in a factory in China, and then within a few weeks or months, a factory down the road is turning out the exact same product, a counterfeit version of what you're making, and they're selling it on the market under a different name. This is a simplified version of what China is doing, but intellectual property theft and proprietary property theft so that they can counterfeit those products and get them on the market so So they're winning in both scenarios. Number one, they take a majority stake in a joint venture with a U.S. entity, and so they're raking in some money there. And then they pirate the technology that's being utilized so they can produce a counterfeit product and make money on that. So, you know, China has been an egregious offender in the global marketplace, and at some point in time, the United States has got to say enough is enough. Now, we've been in a trade war for 20-plus years, and this is our first shot. This is our first return salvo in an ongoing trade war with China. And I think at some point in time, we as Americans have to say enough is enough, and maybe we're going to, you know, experience a little short-term discomfort. And that's a maybe. I'm not even sure that beyond a little economic saber-rattling that China is doing right now, that they're certainly not in any position to not import U.S. soybeans and possibly U.S. corn, because the demand model is there, and that won't change. The fundamentals in China have not changed with regard to their demand for soybeans and other commodities. And so U.S. soybeans, U.S. commodities are going to go to China. It's just a question of whether or not they go as a direct result of direct sales, or whether they go through some intermediary, for example, Argentina, who just had a crop failure and they can't fill an order. They've got to get it from somewhere if they want to fill that order. So the point is, these commodities are fungible in the global marketplace, and U.S. commodities will go to China. And I also know that China is a last-ditch effort, as a final last-ditch Hail Mary, might implement those 25% tariffs on soybeans. But that's a long shot deal, in of those being long term and sustained over time. So, but bottom line is, U.S. farmers are going to continue to be competitive in the marketplace, and it's just time for us to call out China for the cheaters that they are.
U.S. Congressman Rick Crawford, appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
And we're going to go back to Morning Edition, already in progress. You are listening to KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves reporting.